Sports Out the Wazoo.
The batting stance guy joining us tonight on Sports Out the Wazoo.
Who's Moses Alou? You know, from the side angle, his knees are bent, you know, completely in, almost touching. His jersey's too small. His lips too small. His bat's too small. His helmet's too small. I mean, it looks like your six-year-old trying to make a joke.
We have Darren Gant from the Rocky Hill Herald.
I think more so than just getting a win, they got to play better football.
In 2000, the New York Yankees beat the New York Mets 4-3 in 12 innings.
Most overrated World Series in my entire life.
Well, coming with overratedness, you got it. It was the longest World Series game, 4 hours and 51 minutes. So, pretty boring, yeah.
Could be top this year.
And welcome to Sports Out the Wazoo, sponsored by Capone's, located off of 454 West King Street. 828-265-1886 is the number. Brandon Dixon, Chris Kroeger, Justin Kazefis, back after an eventful weekend. A lot of stuff panning out. We'll get to tons of it. NFL, MLB, NBA preview later on in the show as well.
Mixed bag of tricks for me over the weekend, Brandon. I tell you what, Saturday, who would have thought that would have happened on Black Saturday at The Rock? We'll talk about that in a second. Yesterday, Panthers fans are in mourning. It's hard to say this. I mean, they're only 2-4, but it seems as if the season has ended in week six.
I think the writing's on the wall.
We'll get to that in a little bit. So a lot to get into tonight. Great college football weekend over the weekend as well. NFL, like I just talked about, a huge comeback in the NFL. We'll talk about that. Lots to get into. World Series is finally set, so we'll preview that a little bit. We almost knew what it was going to be for the past week, basically, so we'll talk about that a little bit more. And as you said, the NBA season preview. Lots of ways to get involved tonight if you feel so adamant. 828-264-4905 is the number to call. 828-264-4905. Also, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/sportsoutthewazoo. If you want to tweet at us during the show, twitter.com/SOTW_show. Or you can email us at SOTWshow@gmail.com. So lots of ways to get involved tonight. Brandon, we're going to start it off with Black Saturday. I just talked about it a second ago. And I tell you what, I was very impressed with my Mountaineers on Saturday, our Mountaineers on Saturday. And part of
I like
me,
how you, it's your possession, my Mountaineers.
I had the call on Saturday, so I like
what
to be.
What college campus are we on right now?
I like to be very singular in that right there. But I tell you what, going into this game during the week, doing some preparation, I just felt like this was one of those games, and it had the same sort of feeling, and it was about the same exact time, actually, but the same feeling as last year on Halloween night against Wofford, where it was two teams. Georgia Southern wasn't as good as that Wofford team was coming in last year, but Georgia Southern, a very good team. Their conference record was 3-1 coming into this game. They were much improved. Their offense was bad, but their defense has been pretty solid. And, of course, this is a rivalry game. The road team had won 3 in a row coming into this game. All the games have been close. So you kind of felt like, you know what, this is going to be a I felt like this one was supposed to be a knockdown, drag-out fight, but part of me in my gut said, man, I feel like ASU might be able to blow this team out. Not necessarily 70-24, not necessarily 52-16, but I felt like we could win by more than two touchdowns.
It seems like the last two games that I thought were going to be the close games that we really needed to win, that were going to be very important to the season, and games that I thought we could legitimately lose, was Wofford last year, in which it was complete and total blowout, a massacre. And then this year was the Georgia Southern game, because that's the one I kind of had marked. I mean, obviously Elon going further into the schedule, but at this point in the season, when you look at it and say, okay, what's the next big game truly? This is the one I had circled, because I said, hey, 2 years ago, Georgia Southern beat us at home.
Yeah. Nation's longest winning streak at that time, 30 games.
I don't think Georgia Southern, between Georgia Southern and App, it's been like 20-some years or something since a team has won back-to-back games in consecutive seasons. So I knew they were going to want to come out after us. We had a one-point victory against them last year,
37-36
down in Georgia, down in Statesboro. And really, it seemed like this could be the game where they could trip us up and kind of stop all that momentum that we had coming into this game, and that would be a devastating loss. But in the end, Appalachian up 52-16, and that's your final. And really, it was a dominating game from all ends. I think if you don't have those two turnovers, That game's 59 to nothing, maybe 59-3 or something.
And their offense has been bad. And the thing with Georgia Southern coming into this game, when they lose big. They lost by an average of 27 points a game when they lose. So when they lose, they don't just make it close. They roll over and play dead for a while. And I tell you what, that's what happened on Saturday. But the offense has been there for the past few weeks. The offense is now number one in total offense in the country in the FCS. The offense has been
When you have 712 yards, a school record.
School record in yardage. They've been
averaging. That's what I'm talking about when I think of all-time records with total yardage. Last week, the 600 yards at the
Patriots. It's in the NFL. You don't see that in the NFL.
700 is what
I think.
Okay,
but it's a college game. There's fad offenses. You don't see that in the NFL. So that was my point with that. But still, coming into this game, ASU's offense was there. The question mark was the defense. There were some quotes during the week. Cortez Gilbert said after the game, look, we were sick of hearing about how bad we were. We were sick of hearing it from the media. We were sick of hearing it from our fans. We were sick of, hey, what happened to that team in 05? Or what happened to that team in 06? We want to be the team from 09. We want to make people forget about that. They did a great job on Saturday, only allowing 15 yards on the ground. 15 yards.
They were incredible. And you know what? Jabari Fletcher was the man. He was just a beast.
The whole defensive line, my hat's off to him. They didn't get the sacks necessarily. Great pressure and disruption
in the
backfield.
But they did at the same time because Jabari Fletcher was in that backfield all day long. It helped cause the interception that Mark Legree was finally able to have. I think he's starting to come back on now. Seemed like he had disappeared the first, four or five games of the season, really. And really, he's getting the pressure. And that's what I said all along. I said, we've got probably the most talent on paper of any team, really, in my opinion, especially defensively. In the SoCon.
Yes.
And you know what? Especially defensively with all the experience and everything else that we have, I mean, you could argue it. But either way, I thought this was a very talented group, but they were not putting it together. And I thought the biggest thing was the linebackers were playing all right, but they were still getting burnt on some place. The secondary was still not producing enough, but the D-line was my biggest thing. They were not getting enough pressure. Well, I saw a completely different D-line. I saw one that owned up to all of its potential this past Saturday against Georgia Southern.
Three things led to the defensive play on Saturday. I'm going to give you to them in this order. Monday, when practice came back last Monday after that Wofford game, the coaching staff and the players had a heart-to-heart, and they said, look, this is downright embarrassing, and you guys better have some dignity, you better have some self-respect, and if you're serious about being a national championship contender, it starts right now. Get your act together. We're not screwing around anymore. That was step one. Later on in that day, of course, they actually practiced in helmets and shells, which never happens at this point in the season on a Monday. So that was step one. Step two, the coaching staff, they changed the way they practiced. When they were practicing against the scout team who mimics the other team's offense or defense, they were taking them down to the ground. They were actually tackling them. Normally, they just wrap them up because they want to avoid injuries. They were playing hard. They were scrambling to the ball in practice, trying to mimic a game environment. And then step three.
And making tackles was the biggest thing
that
they struggled with.
And step three was, we're gonna substitute some players in. Justin Lloyd, who had been a redshirt freshman, had been the Bandit linebacker. He was removed to go to Frazier, who took over as a true freshman for the Bandit position. Did a great job. You didn't hear his name called, but that's because he wasn't out of position. That's what you'd like to see from a Bandit player. He's not a guy who's roaming the field making tackles like DJ Smith or Jacques Roman. And then also, you had Dominic McDuffie come in to play that nickelback instead of Jared Rain on Saturday. A guy who was a starting cornerback, got injured last year, finally earned his way back in the lineup. Those three things combined kind of gave a renewed energy for the defense, and it showed up on Saturday. 16 points allowed, only 15 yards on the ground. I mean, it was just yards per rush, 0.6. That's ridiculous. 15
they only
yards
had 171 yards total as an offense to Georgia Southern, 156 through the air. And this is a guy, too, in Chapel that led the SoCon in interceptions. Now, Appalachian was only able to pick him off once, but they were able to contain everybody, and they were breaking up passes all over the field.
He was just out of sync all day.
They made that offense look completely out of sync. I mean, I saw a stepped-up defensive effort to absolutely just close in and just absolutely suffocate that Eagles offense, and that's what you saw. That's why they were not able to move the ball at all, except for those two turnovers. That's the only reason they had points on the board.
Okay, well, moving forward to this coming week, we're going to play at Furman down in Greenville. Furman dealt a huge blow to their Southern Conference title hopes on Saturday as they lost to the Citadel. The Citadel took out Blanchard as the quarterback, plugged in somebody else. They actually win a game against Furman. That was a pretty big upset there. So Furman, you got to take care of business against this team. You got to take care of business against Chattanooga 2 weeks from now. Then the Elon matchup comes up 3 weeks from now. So hopefully you'll see what happens with that. But Elon, they win again big over the weekend. So this team is for real. It's shaping up like it was going to be last year when we saw Elon versus ASU the next to last week of the season for who was going to win the title. And Elon is good. There's no doubt. They actually have the best defense statistically in the conference, a top five defense in the country in the whole FCS.
And I think, the second best offense, too.
Yeah, the thing is with Elon, I don't believe it until I see it. And if you want to be the best, you want to be called the number one team in the SoCon, you got to go through ASU to do it. I'm not ready to say that right now. I think if ASU got their swagger back, but you know what? You got to continue that against your lesser opponents. That's what you're going to see against Furman and Chattanooga in the next 2 weeks. So watch out what happens with that. Looking forward, though, some other college football games of interest over the weekend. A thriller in Alabama versus Tennessee, Alabama has to block a kick in the final seconds to stay unbeaten and stay alive for their national title.
The second block kick, too,
yeah,
of that game. And, you know, a 12-10 game, this was not what a lot of people saw. They saw it as more of an offensive game.
Yeah.
They thought that Tennessee and Alabama were going to really kind of go for a barn burner type of game. And really,
Alabama almost blew it at the end, though. You know?
Alabama nearly blew it at the end. Tennessee, if they make their field goal, I mean, that's a complete stunning game because here goes Alabama's BCS title hopes. Probably out the window, or at least pretty damaged at that point, especially this late in the season to Tennessee. And then especially at home, I mean, you saw those fans, they definitely had their hands on their heads. They were anticipating a potential game-winning field goal. Luckily, they escaped that game, stay unbeaten, moved down in the rankings, but still second overall.
And they're not the only ones having trouble in the SEC. Florida taking on a lesser opponent, Mississippi State, down at Mississippi
State.
They have
not seemed impressive really all season.
But Florida really, it took them until the better half of late in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter for them to really turn on the jets, give them some separation from Mississippi State Bulldogs. They were able to win, and that one, Florida, we'll talk about them in Alabama, where they are in the BCS standings.
Tim Tebow
second.
Was calling out, I don't know if he was really calling out Urban Meyer, but he was definitely calling out the play calling, especially on offense, because he did not like it, and you can see.
Well, he's the one who made the mistake. He's the one who threw the pick six at the end of the first half, so I don't want to hear anything out of his mouth. Because
They're still very dysfunctional right now. I don't know if it's just Tim Tebow. He's, you know, the concussion's still, I don't know
they
if
missed
it's still
Dan Mullen,
him.
Period.
But either way, yeah, I mean, they do not seem like they are in sync right now.
Dan Mullen is the new head coach at Mississippi State. For those who don't know, he was the former offensive coordinator at Florida, and I tell you what, if you look at Florida's numbers statistically, where they were the past couple years to where they are now, they are a shell of what they once were on offense.
And Tim Tebow does not look dominant, and really, before the concussion, if you look at his stats, sure, they're pretty impressive, but at the same time, they're not what they were last year.
No.
I mean, he was absolutely dominating teams, taking on teams by himself. That's how he got that reputation. You go to this year, it's not quite the same.
Miami loses on Saturday, keeping in the state
to
of Florida.
Clemson.
To Clemson, exactly. A decent Clemson team, but if Miami is serious, we've talked about this for the past couple weeks. The ACC is a joke, and it seems as if there's two or three top teams. It's either Miami, Virginia Tech, or Georgia Tech.
You know what?
Virginia Tech's a joke. Miami's a joke. I want to see if Georgia Tech can hold on.
Here's the deal, though, with Miami. I think they're still too young right now.
They have
a lot of raw talent, and in the next year or two, they're going to be up there with Virginia Tech, maybe even Georgia Tech, where they are right now. But right now, I think they're too young, and I think the same is with Florida State, because they've kind of had a transition period where they've had to get rid of all the bad
Getting
better.
See, I don't think Florida State's anywhere close. Miami's close.
They're way far behind Miami, but I think overall, as far as talent, they're finally getting all the bad seeds out and starting to get some good talent in there. I think it's going to be a few years. Probably Bobby Bowden will be out of there before they're good again, but either way, I think Miami's just too young right now.
A lot of analysts are saying Florida State is very dysfunctional. They're not on the same page as a coaching staff, as an organization, from the top to bottom in the athletic
department.
But
why does that surprise you, though?
Well, no, it doesn't surprise me. And the recruiting. They say the recruiting isn't there because they are so dysfunctional, basically, as a family.
I think they have a lot of talent, but they just haven't put it together yet.
Well, it's not as good as it used to be. That's what a lot of people are saying.
I agree.
Keeping it in one last game of interest, really, and this one really, I mean, it teared me up. It gave me goosebumps to watch it. The other Mountaineers taking the field on Saturday, West Virginia in Morganton, we're playing, or Morgantown, I guess. I'm from North Carolina, so I call it Morganton down in here, but it's Morgantown. UConn versus West Virginia, and UConn, as everybody knows, we talked about it last week, losing cornerback Jasper Howard as he was murdered on campus last week. A father-to-be, just a real sad situation, but I get chills right now thinking of his teammates came out holding his jersey and holding his helmet. They laid it on the side of the field, hanging in memory of him. And the West Virginia fans just stood and applauded as their team came out onto the field. They actually, as both teams came out, they actually went out and shook hands and hugged one another and offered condolences. I mean, it was a great, great scene. Even the head coaches hugged each other and embraced one another before and after the game. It was a great scene. And it's, you know what, college football, any sort of sport, sports great. Everybody loves that rivalry, loves that competitiveness, loves that passion and fire. But there are more important things in life, and I think we saw that with West Virginia and UConn on Saturday.
And this is something we kind of talked about last week, and we touched on it, and how big of a tragedy this is, especially you know, coming into this game. They didn't know if they should suspend the game or not, but they believed that Jasper would wanted this game to go on, and so they wanted to do a memorial for him. So no better way to do that. I wish I would have been able to see it. I did not see that. I was, you know, off watching other games and doing other stuff, but either way, I think that's a proper memorial for him.
And hats off to UConn, because you know what? You have to be playing with a heavy heart in a situation like that. And a lot of times it gets so built up. And the situation that comes to my mind is Virginia Tech, after the Virginia Tech shootings that spring and then a fall of the football team. there were such high expectations of, oh, they're going to rally around this. And you can't force that sort of thing. It's so easy to say, I think this is going to be a turning point. I think this is going to be a rallying point for this team. It's so easy to force that from a media's perspective, a fan's perspective.
It's kind of like the Angels with Nick
exactly.
Adenhardt as well.
Sometimes that stuff's just not meant to be. That's too much of a fairy tale story. But in this situation, UConn played very well, played above themselves for how they've played all year long, really gave West Virginia a run for their money. And outside of a late comeback, really, by West Virginia, UConn had that game wrapped up. So that was just a great scene. And I encourage anybody, if you didn't see it, go on YouTube or go to ESPN, look up the highlights, ESPN.com, and look up the highlights for that West Virginia UConn game. Keeping it wrapping up real quickly in college football, we're going to talk about the polls, Brandon. And we just talked about the teams at the top of the standings. The BCS standings really got a good shakeup in the top five this week. Florida still at number one, Alabama still at number two, Texas still at number three. But Iowa, who holds on late, gets a win against Michigan State over the weekend.
Where have they come from, either?
We talked about it in the past couple weeks. Yeah, they're doing it quietly.
They were a very good defensive squad. They were coming on kind of onto the scene. But
they
would have thought
quietly. They don't blow teams out, and that's the problem.
I mean, if you'd asked me before the season if they were number three in the nation or would ever be, I would say absolutely not.
Well, I knew they were there. It's just because they're not paying attention because they're not winning 52-0. They're winning 21-20.
They don't have that star player, that Tim Tebow, the Sam Bradford.
Exactly. But the good teams win the close ones. They're scrappy, and that's what Iowa is. USC moving into the top five. They're trying to get back into BCS title hopes at number five. TCU leapfrog Boise State. They're at six. Boise State's at seven. Cincy's at eight. LSU is nine. Oregon rounds out the top ten. So there was a little bit of a shakeup in the top ten there. But Boise State is in number six in the AP poll. Cincy's five. USC's four. Texas, Alabama, and Florida round out your top five there. So I don't know if any of that's surprising. I mean, the BCS standings, they're not very good for a team like Boise State and TCU. And TCU, I tell you what, they went into Provo, Utah, and just laid the beatdown on BYU on Saturday. Very impressive win for them.
It seems like we see Boise State especially and TCU kind of the last few years. These are the two teams everybody wants to rally around. They want to see that improbable guy.
It's tough.
You know, that improbable odd of being able to be in the BCS title game, and I just don't see it happening.
It's not going to happen.
There's too much biasness towards Texas and Florida and even Alabama. I think those schools are going to have that advantage.
It's not even
over Boise State and TCU any day.
It's not even the media's bias against them anymore. What kills them is their strength of schedule. What kills them are these statistics that the BCS computers like to mess with, and at the end of the day, it drags them down.
You know what else kills them? It is people, especially voters and stuff for the BCS and all these writers, they see the fact that, you know, Georgia, when they beat up on Hawaii a few years back, they see a lot of these games and they say, these might be blowouts. We want the best ratings. We want to bring in the most.
How about Utah? Utah took care of business against Alabama. I don't think that's the problem
anymore.
And
Boise State beat Oklahoma. Yeah. So, I think there's more parity than people like to give it. But either way, I still think that at the same time, I think these voters are still dead set on the fact that, all right, we can't let these teams in. They're just not strong enough. They're not going to provide enough ratings. And I think that's the reason why they don't get in.
I agree to a certain extent. I think the numbers game is what kills them more than ever because I think they are starting to gain more credibility. A team like TCU and Boise State doing it year after year, I think people really are wanting to give them more of a chance. Now, the numbers are just fighting against them. You got to climb that wall. That wall looks about 50 feet tall right now. So we'll keep track of that as the season winds on. We got to take a quick break. We get back. The Panthers disappointing again over the weekend, trying to get to 500. Not so good. Didn't get there. So we'll talk about the Panthers. Some other great games of interest in the NFL. Yesterday, we'll talk about that as well. Also, World Series on tap. We're going to get to that coming up in a little bit. So more sports at the Wazoo. It's coming up next on 90.5 WASU FM, online at WASURocks.com.